It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome, welcome back to Money for Lunch. Man, it's good to have you guys here. And today we're going to get a checkup from the neck up. My first guest, Dr. Steve G. Jones. He's a board-certified clinical hypnotherapist. He's been practicing hypnotherapy since the 1980s. He's the author of 22 books on hypnotherapy. He's a member of the National Guild of Hypnotherapists, American Board, as well as the American Board of Hypnotherapy, president of the American Alliance of Hypnotists, and on the board of the directors of the Los Angeles chapter of the American Lung Association, and director of the California State Registered Steve G. Jones School of Hypnotherapy. This guy is always good to have on the show. Steve G. Jones, welcome back, my friend.
Well, thanks, Bert. Thanks for having me back.
You bet, man. And it's good to have you here. And, you know, it's interesting because we are now, what, 6 weeks into the new year?
That sounds right.
Yeah, about 6 weeks into the new year. And statistically, like 90% of, resolutions have bit the dust.
Yep.
And why do you think that is? What is happening to us that we can't even commit for 6 weeks?
Well, I think people think that they should make a change, and they look at the year and they think, wow, you know, I could have done things a little differently. I could have done things better. I could have manifested this or changed that. And I think, oh, okay, January 1st, that's my date to quit all this bad stuff and start all this good stuff. And it's just so arbitrary and really has no actual meaning or momentum behind it that the sustainability part is just missing. So it's like I was telling a good friend of mine recently. He goes on these yo-yo diets. You know, he'll gain a bunch of weight, then he'll start working out really hard and, you know, post it on Facebook. Look, I'm at the gym. And then he'll stop working out. And then he'll, you know, eat a bunch of high-carb foods for a while and not work out. I said, look, here's what you need to do. You need to not get all excited when you go to the gym. You need to just make it part of your life. It shouldn't be an event. It should be part of your life, just like shaving in the morning. And it needs to be something that's not a super-duper workout, because I worked out with him one of these times when he was in one of these moods, and we were both sore for about 2 weeks. And I could barely move my arms because the intensity is so high during that time. You know, I must work out. And then he's not able to work out for a while. So it's all about sustainability and picking something that fits into your lifestyle, that makes sense for you, and having good reasons why you're doing it and a good ongoing support plan.
Well, and I want to emphasize something that you said that caught my attention, and that is I'm supposed to make a resolution. I'm supposed to want to make a change. I'm supposed to want to lose weight. And maybe it's not really what you're supposed to do. As you said, you have to have good reasons for that, for losing weight, gaining weight, having more money. And just because everybody else is doing that, maybe you shouldn't do it. Maybe you need to just kind of tune all that noise out and decide, okay, what's really important to me? And as you said, fit it into my life. How can I, you know, I want to maybe go, I don't know, take a really nice vacation or climb some whatever mountain. And, you know, that's probably going to be an odd thing. A lot of people wouldn't put that on a list of things to do. And then, you know, you start building a plan around that. Like you said, okay, so how do I sustain this? How do I get around people who also like to climb, and you maybe join a climbing club or, you know, some group online and stuff like that, and you start hanging around these people and you get that climbing mindset. But this is something that, you know, that you want to do for the reasons that you think are important, and it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks.
Absolutely. Yeah, something that, yeah, exactly. And climbing is a great example of something that, you know, I was asked if I wanted to go climb, I think it was Mount Kilimanjaro, which I really actually don't know. As a good American, I don't really know where that is, but I was invited to go climb it. And I was walking around with this person. We were walking for a few miles in Nevada talking about it, and my feet started to hurt. And I said, you know, I don't think I'll be doing that. And the fact is I was born with club feet, and I had an operation on my Achilles tendons when I was a baby. And so my feet are not really designed for super-duper endurance. So for me, I could look at that and say, you know, that's nice. I feel really good, and it'd be a very ego-driven type achievement for me, but it's not for me. It's really not a good idea for me. I can quote-unquote prove myself or explore the world in different ways that are good for me. So, yeah, you have to use some logic. You have to use analysis. You have to figure out what's right for you, what's not right for you. And when we talk about things like stopping weight gain or actually losing weight or building muscle or stopping smoking or any of these things we want to clean up, it has to be a plan that's really well thought out and is really going to work. And, for example, I started recently. It has nothing to do with New Year's. It's just the culmination of me getting the experts together happened right around New Year's, but I've been working on it for quite a while, getting a dietitian, getting a fitness expert to train me, to teach me certain things. I've already been working on it on my own for a while, but these are things that are well thought out, and they're not things that hinder my life. In fact, with a dietitian, the food she's got me eating, I'm more full than I was when I was eating not great food. So it's actually an enhancement.
No, it's interesting. Yeah. Well, you know what, and I'm glad you brought that up. Sometimes the food that we eat don't, satisfy us, right? And therefore we're hungry. You know, people make fun of, you know, you eat Chinese food now and you're hungry like when 30 minutes later or something like that. There are some foods that really do behave that way because your body can consume it so quickly as opposed to, a green leafy type of salad. It takes the body a long time to break that down, and so you're not hungry for a longer period of time. But something some sweet, delicious, sugary bread, you know, straight out of the oven, your body will eat that, consume that immediately, and you'll be hungry very quickly and probably have a hankering for more bread, and that's a sure sign or a sure way to gain weight is eating a bunch of these sugary carbs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the closer it is to a sugar already, the faster it's going to be broken down, and the more of that you eat, the more fat is going to be stored. So, yeah, it's any carb can potentially go toward fat storage. But these are things that I learned recently from my dietitian, which I already knew, but I needed to be reminded of them. So, So it's amazing the little changes. That's one thing that I've been fascinated by when working with the dietitian and working with the personal trainer. I've been working out for years, and I've been watching what I eat for years. But the little tweaks that they helped me make that I actually already knew about because I've put them into my programs, but I was ignoring them for myself, the little tweaks are so simple. It's amazing how sometimes you make a change that's so simple in your life, just doing one thing differently, substituting protein for a carb, for example, something very easy to do in a meal, and it makes a huge difference. You can lose a lot more weight and build a lot more muscle with that one simple move. So when we think about these big changes we want to make for the New Year's resolutions dying out and losing steam, like we talked about at the top of the interview, you know, it's a matter of realizing that these don't have to be big, mind-blowing changes. Usually they're very, very simple changes.
Yes, yes. You know, and I'm glad you brought that up because we always think of making these drastic, big things, big changes. In reality, what's the old saying? You got to crawl before you can walk, and you got to walk before you can run. And so it's making these little changes. I remember years ago, I enlisted the help of a coach, and objective for me was to shine the very tips of my shoes, of my dress shoes, not the entire shoe, but just the tips. And of course, you know, I said, okay, I do it. And because, you know, I'm this huge overachiever, I said, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and get the whole thing done. And so the lesson was that sometimes doing a little bit can make a big difference, and sometimes just getting started will give us enough motivation to go more, to do more. It's not like you have to, you know, set out this massive goal, especially one that you've never done, but to do this little stuff. And we know that, you know, we all know this, but, you know, we forget. We like to be reminded that, you know, inch by inch, it's a cinch. Yard by yard, it's really hard.
I like that. I like that a lot. You know, and you think about it, you know, these days, of course, I've been on the Millionaire Matchmaker TV show, and I've been in Forbes, written up as a millionaire, and Bravo's Below Deck as a millionaire. So people look at that and they think, I'd like to be a millionaire. And so I offer a lot of help for that. You know, people getting their thoughts together, getting their positive thoughts, and really finding something they love to do. But the fascinating thing about becoming wealthy is it's kind of like losing weight. By saving a little bit of money every month and investing it in something that's relatively safe and is going to, you know, pay a dividend and compound over time, you can become a millionaire. And I think people are really shocked when they find it, because we see all these reality shows saying, oh yeah, you can have this lavish lifestyle, and they think, wow, what can I do to get a windfall of money? Or you can look sexy. Wow, what can I do to lose a ton of weight in a month? Well, these things are easy to do as long as you make simple changes. So becoming a millionaire is easy. You start saving money early as possible, and you put it into something that's going to earn a good dividend, a good return, is going to grow over time. Losing weight is easy. You just start making changes in your diet, and you stick to that. So I think we've been sold on this idea that these things are only available to a select few, and they're very difficult, and we should achieve them as quickly as possible, when actually, if people who achieve things quickly, like getting a lot of money in the lottery, for example, they usually don't know what to do with it because they don't have the underpinning, the skills to do what they're supposed to do with the money, or even the respect for the money. So they end up squandering it.
Absolutely. And I want to point this out. Look, everybody has an incubation period, right? Yeah, an overnight success takes about, you know, 15, 20 years. I mean, look at all the stuff that you've done. You know, you've written 22 books. That didn't happen in 22 months or in 22 weeks or in 22 days. You know, how long did it take you to write 22 books?
That took about 22 years, actually.
Well, and so a lot of people will look and say, hey, I want to do that. I want to do what Dr. Steve G. Jones did. I want to write 22 books. Oh man, this is really hard. Oh, this is much, takes a lot longer time than I thought. And going back to what you said earlier, you know, they don't have the right reasons. They want to do it because they want to be like you, but they don't really, you know, they're not doing it because they love their audience or they love the niche that they're in or they, you know, whatever. And so you have to be willing to put in the time to become a millionaire. You have to be willing to put in the time to become a best-selling author. You have to be willing to put in the time to achieve whatever XYZ is for you. And I like what you said there. Becoming a millionaire, it's easy. Here are the steps. You know, you start saving money, you start investing money, and slowly over time you do that. You know, here's something I've noticed I have met more people who rent limousines and exotic cars who work for a living than millionaires that rent limousines and exotic cars.
Yep.
And I found that to be interesting. You know, back to what you were saying, it's here are these people who want to look successful but don't have the skills, the underpinning skills to respect the money and to make the money. They want the flash in the pan. They just don't know how to make that sustaining burn. And so therefore they're squandering the money. So they spend $1,000 and they rent this really nice car. That's great. Or $500, whatever it is, as opposed to taking that $500 or that $1,000, you invest it, and all of a sudden that money doubles or triples, or you rent, and then, you know, you put it into a real estate deal or something that eventually makes you real money. Because once you start respecting your money, you're less likely to squander it on these flashy little things that don't matter.
Absolutely. You know, I remember being part of a network, what do they call it, multi-level marketing company in the 1980s. And I won't say which one, because what I'm about to say is not the most positive thing, but they were encouraging everyone to, to stay in a 5-star hotel and to spend as much money as they could to get themselves accustomed to these things. Well, you know, it's interesting if you read, and you probably have, Bert, read The Millionaire Next Door, the book.
Yes.
And it's interesting, this is about 1996, so this is about 20 years ago, but the idea still holds true that, you know, millionaires tend to not waste money. You know, they can stay in a 5-star hotel, but that's not the goal in their lives. They realize that money can compound and can make more money. And so they tend to be responsible with the money. And in the book, they had set out this platter for these people who are decamillionaires, meaning they have at least $10 million. And they had set out caviar and Perrier and, you know, things they thought the decamillionaires would like. They have at least $10 million to their name. They didn't want that. They wanted Schlitz beer and they wanted crackers. You know, they weren't squandering. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with spending money, and there's nothing wrong with having nice things and feeling good. And we all do it from time to time. I certainly do it. But the idea that you have to keep up with the Joneses, as they say, and do that stuff all the time, if you don't have the money, that doesn't make any sense. If you don't have the money, then what you need to do is let your money work for you and not throw it away.
Absolutely. You know, I was talking about this the other day. One of the other things that has become popular now is to buy followers. So you can go to Fiverr, and there's a couple other companies. I'm just picking Fiverr because I've seen it there several times. But you can buy followers, so that way you blow up your Twitter profile or your Facebook, and you have all these people who like you, and look how popular it is. And look at all the social proof I have. I have tens of thousands of followers. I'm so special. Well, the problem with that is that, again, it's not only is that fake, you're out of integrity, but that nobody's liking your stuff because you don't have any real followers. You don't have a connection with that audience. And therefore, sooner or later, it doesn't mean anything. You know, as opposed to going back to what we were talking about earlier, where you put in the work and you write the books, and you put out the content to create the followers, to create the money, to create the lifestyle that you want. You know, there, you know, shortcuts are seldom, they do not give you permanent or real solutions. The only shortcut
right.
that I know that really works is just putting in the time. It's hard work. And it's hard work for a reason. That's it.
I agree, and I know someone like that. It's a lady who has a kid who wants to be the next Justin Bieber, and suddenly they had, I think it was Instagram, he went from zero followers to I think it was like 10,000 followers in a weekend, and I said, you know, I haven't talked to anyone who knows your son. I don't really think he's got a following in the world. I don't really, and he hasn't done anything. He's still taking singing lessons, so I think there was some falsification going on there, but the thing that sticks with me is something, and I forget who it was. It was a seminar I took when I lived in Los Angeles around the year 2000, and the lady said, if you want to be great, first be good. And what I took away from that is, if you want to be this great, wonderful, well-known, famous person, then you've got to do some good in the world. You've got to make a contribution. You've got to do something that's contributing to the world first.
Yes, well, you hit the nail right on the head. You have to be good. There is no shortcut, no substitution for being good. Listen, if you don't have a following, you simply haven't put out enough good content. If you don't have the money that you want, again, you're just not working hard enough. You're not putting out enough value. Dr. Jones, we're out of time, but it's always good to have you on the show. Looking forward to having you back again. And, man, it was a lot of fun having you on today.
Well, thanks, Bert. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Good stuff there from Dr. Steve G. Jones. And Dr. Steve G. Jones has, in my opinion, the world's largest audio library on hypnosis. And you can check him out at stevegjones.com. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Oh, we're back. We are back. Listen, my next guest is Roberto Blake. This guy came over in YouTube. And so Roberto Blake has a massive YouTube following. We're going to be talking about how to get 10,000 YouTube subscribers in less than 12 months. Interestingly enough, these are real YouTube subscribers. We're not talking about faking people out. Roberto Blake, if you go to YouTube and you just type in Roberto Blake, you'll see that this guy has, like I said, a massive following. And one of the things that I notice is that he's constantly putting out new content. I know it's kind of a weird thing to put out new content on a regular basis, but that's what it takes. I mean, each week he helps create awesome things. He shares them with you. And if you're a designer, an artist, a photographer, entrepreneur, musician, any type of creative person, Roberto Blake can help you out. And what you're going to love about Roberto Blake is that he's just a very laid-back guy. What you see on YouTube is kind of what you get. Over 80,000 people follow him on YouTube. Roberto Blake, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hi, how are you doing today? Thanks for having me on the show.
You bet. All right, so let's get into this. How did you start your YouTube show?
So, you know, the first thing people have to remember is that I came from a background of actually having a career in creative services, you know, design and marketing and advertising, websites, you know, all that stuff. So I didn't go into this naively. I didn't go into this without an understanding of how online platforms and the internet and how people find content. You know, you talked about the volume of content that I put out. Consistency has always mattered in business. It's always mattered in marketing. YouTube is no different. You want attention. You want people to follow you. You want people to interact with you. Well, why are they going to do that? You know, if you're not showing up same bat time, same bat channel, there's no consistency. There's no expectation being set. And so that's kind of where I started. I started with, well, what do I know? I knew Photoshop. I started with tutorials helping other people. Like, you know, what would have been valuable to a young Roberto 10 years ago? So I did what I knew. I did something that I knew that people had an interest in that seems very complicated, very hard. And I provided that upfront value, and I did it on a consistent basis. So that was how I got my start. As people, you know, grew to like that and start asking me for other things and other questions and understanding a little bit more about my background, I started to then answer the demand of, well, people want to know more about this subject or this topic. So I branched into, well, what do I know about this thing? Well, I'll share that experience. So, you know, understanding what your strengths are, being consistent, responding to the marketplace. Those things have always mattered, and because I approached YouTube with practicality and with my business sense, I think that's where the differentiator in me being successful really was.
Yeah, I love that. And when you go to his YouTube channel, what's really cool is, you know, his slogan, or at least one of the slogans, is about create awesome, right? So create something awesome today. He's got his subscriber video there, kind of explaining what he's all about. And then underneath that, you can see there's an offer to join the Create Awesome newsletter, listen to CSAT podcast.
Yeah, which is an acronym for Create Something Awesome Today.
Create Something Awesome Today, CSAT, I love that. And so, you know, or get a Create Awesome shirt. And so he's got these links there. So he's driving – He's creating content. He's driving activity to his channel, and then he's got some links there. All right, so let's kind of dive into this a little bit. When you are when you're coaching your clients or you're giving advice or whatever, how do you start? How do you get people ready for 10,000 subscribers in less than 12 months? What's the first step?
So the thing with that is you have to understand whether or not that's a realistic goal or what you actually need. Because the thing is, I'm not selling people on the, you know, 10,000 subscribers in 12 months if that's not what they need to do. For some people, the reality is that those numbers of subscribers won't move the needle for their business. I mean, you know, you and I are both practical people. So you and I both know that 10,000 people subscribed to your YouTube channel might not translate to 10,000 new customers for your business or, you know, 10,000 signups for your mailing list. So how valuable is that to you, and is that a reasonable goal, and is that what you should be focusing on? So the first thing is I help people identify whether that even makes sense or is that really attractive to them. Would you rather have 10,000 subscribers for this year, or would you rather make X amount of dollars on your business by marketing it with video? And
gotcha.
See, that becomes a question. Now,
and you know what's interesting too?
10,000 subscribers.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say.
Oh,
no,
well, 10,000 subscribers is good social proof. It's leverage for marketing for your business, depending on what your arena is. So, if that makes sense, then that makes sense.
Sure. So I like that. So you first got to you got to answer that question. Does it make sense for you? And like a lot of things in business and in life, why do you want it? Do you want it for social proof? Well, that's great. Do you want it, you know, and then of course there's that underlining work that goes into it, because 10,000 subscribers in 12 months or less comes at a cost, meaning you gotta put out a calendar of work. Okay, I'm going to put out, to get 10,000 subscribers is not going to be 10 videos. It might be 100 videos, right? Whatever it is, there's not an easy answer.
Right.
I'm not sure.
No, you're not wrong. There is no easy answer. For some people, it would make sense to do 20 videos, depending on what it is. For some others, it would make sense to do 50. And for some, the answer would be, 100. And then it's a matter of then figuring out a production strategy for, well, is that practical for me, what I'm doing right now, and is it feasible? What most people forget and don't understand is that I shoot my content in blocks. Like this year, I'm going to be putting out 500 videos, but I couldn't do that if I was just sitting here trying to hammer out 2 videos a day willy-nilly the way some people would be trying to do it. What I do is I know that most of the content is already structured and planned. I wrote a content calendar from last year for the entire 2016 year. And so if I know I'm doing a 5-minute, video on a topic, the topic I know cold, it's going to take 7 minutes to do that 5-minute video as far as the recording. I can do that back to back, 8 times. And then, I have that content, and that may have took a little over an hour and a half of the rest of my work day. I then have other days where I can edit that, and one editing session for me per video, because I have the experience, is like 15 or 20 minutes. So someone has to figure out, what does it take to actually produce this content? What's the time valuation? What's the opportunity cost? And does that make practical sense for them? And then what are we looking at? Are we looking at 20 videos? And also, what's the goal of each of these videos? And how is each of these videos going to drive, new subscribers? Like, let's talk a real strategy here real quick. So, throw me a business idea, or, a real business, and I'll try and kind of walk you through what my mindset for that would be.
All right. Let's say you're a business consultant.
Okay. Great. So you're a business consultant. It's a matter of, what's your niche? What's your target market? Who are your clients?
Right. So let's say that you're – okay, so, let's say that you're going to work in the area of sales. You're going to work with doctors or marketing.
Okay.
Doctors, helping doctors market their business. How's that?
Okay, great. So you're going to help, healthcare professionals market their business and reach, new market share. Great. All right. Is video marketing an effective strategy for you? Well, it can be. Let's look at that, and let's even take subscriber counts off the table. What are the 10 pain points that someone who's going to be your consulting client is going to have? What are the 10 questions you are asked by your paying customers right now? Okay, great. make video content around that. How many times can you rephrase or repurpose this question in a way that they're going to look for an answer for it? What's the most valuable thing to them? What systems are they using? Make videos around that. Do they need a CRM? They might need that. Customer relationship management is super important in all industries, in my opinion, but in healthcare, absolutely. Okay, you know, how do they communicate certain things to their customers? What are the pain points of their customers? They're going to try to answer those questions. If you can actually circle back to that and how you can help, a video like that would be very useful. Or even beyond, you know, what is useful for them to know that they need to hire you. What's something that you're okay with helping them solve that doesn't take money out of your pocket that you could kind of give away as a solution or 5 tips or 10 tips or whatever? Make that content be a support system for the audience that you want and for the clients that you want. You build credibility, authority, and trust. And so when they have a question and you're providing those answers, that's how you grow a following, because you're a resource. It's not about you getting subscribers for the sake of getting subscribers. It's about only as many people as value what you're providing consistently and need to keep track of this and need a Rolodex of saying, this website is my archive of these answers that I might not have top of mind, and I bet you if I have a problem, there might be a nugget here that I need to extract. So I'm going to keep track of this. The easiest way for me to keep track of this and not to lose this is to subscribe. The easiest way to know when there's new value for me is to subscribe. I'm going to make it easy on myself to solve these problems in the future now that I know this is good, now that I've tried it, now that I know, oh, this is great. I need to lock it in. And that's right. How you get subscribers. So you position from that from the very beginning of, who do I provide value for? What is the value of that? Why would they come back? And give them a legitimate reason to come back.
I love that, and I hope everybody understood what he's talking about. Provide genuine value. It's not, hi, I'm Bert, let me sell you something. It's, hi, I'm Bert, let me give you some value. Tomorrow I'm going to give you, watch my next video, I'll give you more value. Watch my next video, I'll give you more value. And it's giving you value, 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 value. Yes, interspersed in those values, you can say, hey, download this free report, which is a way of getting building your email list and then eventually getting people to buy. Hey, I'm going to be at this event. Hey, you know, whatever. So not that you don't want to sell. You certainly can, but it's not a infomercial where you're trying to sell. It's more of you want to give value. In that way, you can build a genuine following. Would that be correct?
Right. It's what's called, you know, value. It's what's called passive selling, if you will. It's, you know, this whole thing is not a sales pitch, but an organic sales pitch that is optional is placed in here as an avenue for someone to extrapolate or siphon more value to solve their problem. It's like, if I really need that thing, you know, and that's my next step, I'm just going to buy it. I didn't realize that not having a backup for my computer was that dangerous. And you recommend these 3 hard drives? Yeah, I need to buy one right now because I'm really concerned about what you just talked about. And this means I don't have to second guess it. And that's what you're using? Cool, I'll get it. All of a sudden, a sale is made. You know, a great example of this is Home Depot. Home Depot's YouTube channel is all of these practical, you know, household repair tips and all these things, and you can buy all the resources and all the tools when they're showing you how to do this from the store, and you know that. So it's a very easy thing to just decide, yeah, I'm going to order that, have it delivered to the house, or, oh, I'm going to go out and buy that right now, just like in the video, and I'm going to go ahead and walk through this step by step. It's about making it easy for the person who's consuming your content to take an action.
Yeah, I love that because, you know, and again, if you are an individual who's got a YouTube channel, and this is just one of the ways you can make money on it, is you can not only offer your own products, but you can do affiliate products too. So, hey, I'm reading this great book. This is what I got out of the book. If you want to get this book, there's the link below, and they buy that book, and you get an affiliate commission. It may not make you tons of money, but it adds a little bit to the pot. And little by, you know, I'm a big believer that inch by inch, it's a cent, right? So it doesn't have to be big globs. So, right? I mean, you know.
And it all adds up. And you can do multiple affiliate you could do multiple affiliate systems. You could do multiple videos that have affiliate links. You can grow your email list and then directly sell your products. You can sell your online products. You can use this as social proof to book speaking engagements. You can use this as social proof to leverage content marketing relationships. If you prove yourself to be a subject matter expert, you could get sponsorship from a company that can either send you products or could, you know, even pay you. And, like, I know a lot of people are sketchy or skeptical about, you know, paid sponsorships. What they don't understand is that when someone sends you a product and they're paying you to review it, they're not really paying you for saying good things about the product. You have to actually use the thing and be able to speak intelligently about it. And that takes time from everything else that you're doing opportunity cost-wise that would make you money. You know, I do, you know, consulting and one-on-one coaching for people at $297 an hour. If I'm going to take time away from I could be spending, you know, working one-on-one with a client, why would I do that just to promote somebody's product? If I'm going to take time away from my business, it should be worth my while beyond the value of the product itself, something that I could just as easily purchase. Or why would I make that a priority over putting out a piece of content that positions me better instead of positions this company or brand? So when people are paying for sponsorship, they're paying for priority, they're paying for attention, and they're paying for the time they're taking away from your other ventures. They're not paying, if people are doing it ethically, for you to just say nice things.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. You know, and again, what I'm hoping that everybody is hearing this over and over again, that it's really content. Content is king. And when I say content, I mean valuable content. And that's really what, you know, what it's talking about. The great thing about video is that you can turn on a camera, and I've seen, let me tell you, and I'm sure that you have too, Roberto, that there are people, one of my favorite channels is Taryn with a T. It sounds like Karen, but it's Taryn. I can't remember Taryn's last name now. But she wanted to be an actress, wasn't making it happen in the L.A. area, so she started her YouTube channel. And she has a significant production quality to it. I mean, it's not like the kind of videos that I do where I just throw up a camera and I just start talking wherever I'm at. I don't worry about backdrop so much, and I don't worry too much about editing. It's just wham bam boom. Now, Taryn, she has I want to say a mini studio. She's got some real gear. Sometimes she'll get she's had some Scott Bio and some other celebrities on her show, but that didn't happen until for years, right? So she put out tons of videos, and now she's got over a million, maybe not quite a million. I think she's got like 800,000 subscribers. She routinely gets 200,000-300,000 views after doing it for years. She's got a contract now to do movie reviews and things like that on her show, and so she did all this value for years as a way of showcasing her talent, and then it finally paid off for her.
No such thing as an overnight success.
That's right.
No such thing as an overnight success.
That's right.
You know, some things that people need to keep in mind, aside from, we've talked very philosophically but very practically about, you know, the business side, but I'm sure some people are still wondering, well, how do I, and how did you, Roberto, get, you know, like 10,000 subscribers in, you know, a year of doing this? And, like, there's a couple of key takeaways. Consistency is key, and it's consistency in growth as well, meaning consistency in always upping the level of your production values, the quality of your content, your thoughtfulness, being consistent in responding to people and making them loyal, following up, doing all those things matter. Getting attention matters. You know, a lot of people, they just throw up a video and then they expect something to happen. They're not saying, well, what would someone search for? They're not doing the search engine optimization. They're not putting in keywords that people would search for. They're lazy on that. They're sitting there and they're posting something with no description. So there's no label to make someone understand at a glance. They're watching. You know, when we search for a video in Netflix, we kind of need some information and some context before we decide that we're going to commit to watching that, right? Why would a YouTube video be any different? they're lazy about the thumbnail. They just throw up anything there instead of making a nice thumbnail. Packaging matters. We judge books by their cover. You're competing in the noisiest space in the world with people who have been crushing it here for a decade. Why would you think you can just show up and not put in effort? So if you're not putting effort into a thoughtful title, a thoughtful thumbnail, you're not doing your research first and what would be good for my particular audience, or you're doing something that you think is popular and not something that you're good at, that's going to show through too, because you actually, okay, I got someone to click, I got someone to watch, I need to actually deliver to get them to commit to subscribing. And if I've only been doing this for a week or a month and I have two or three videos, well, I could quit tomorrow. They don't know that there's any real value to be had here. So
right.
They need to see something. They need to see a body of work that says, you know, I'm going to commit to subscribing to this person, the same way that you need to see a body of work before you commit to hiring somebody.
Absolutely. You know, the other person I have followed, not consistently, but I do check him out from time to time, is Gary Vaynerchuk. And so Gary Vaynerchuk...
Love Gary V.
Gary V, you know, what is so... What kind of started teaching me about this whole content thing and the fact that it's a real deal. I mean, you gotta either step up or step out, because there is no in between. And so if you look at my YouTube channel, you can tell, you know, I put up more videos in the last few months than I probably have in the last few years. Why? Because I'm trying to gear up for that. It's a mindset. And one of the things I've learned from Roberto Blake today is, you know, pick a day, you shoot four or five videos, and now, you know, you got a week's worth of video, or maybe it's a month's worth of videos if you want to do them once a week, but instead of trying to shoot a video a day or something like that. But anyway, so Gary Vee, you know, the story is, here he is, he's doing a wine library show, and you can still find it on YouTube, and he said
yep.
that for like 18, 19, 20 months, virtually nothing happened. Yeah, he got some subscribers, but not very many. And all of a sudden, it exploded. All of a sudden, his subscribers started started coming in volume. He started getting invited to be on, like, national TV, Ellen DeGeneres,
Conan,
CNBC.
And Ellen.
Yeah, all these different people are calling this YouTube guy and say, hey, we love what you're doing on YouTube, come be on my show. But he did that show for almost 2 years before he got any recognition. And let me tell you, that's a lot of work, and most people aren't willing to do that, therefore they're not going to get those results.
Exactly. Even with the Gary Vaynerchuk YouTube channel, he'd been doing vlogs and business advice for like – you know, about 4 or 5 years on that channel, and had like barely accumulated 30,000 subscribers. And we're talking about somebody who has 1 million Twitter followers and by that point had become internet famous and a legitimate businessman. It wasn't until like somewhere in, I would say, like 2013, 2014, when he started doing the Ask Gary Vee show, where he started answering people's business questions, pulling them right out of Twitter. And inviting people to ask him anything. That's when he started to get some real traction, and it was only toward the ending part of last year that he got up to, like, you know, 100,000 plus subscribers. He has like about 150,000 now, but that took 800 plus videos. Remember, he only got the bulk of like the last 100,000 of that in the last 2 years, and he had already produced like 600, 400, 600 other videos prior to that.
Right.
And so if you take that into context, that's a lot of work. What's that?
And 2 New York Times bestsellers.
And 3. And
3.
Now he's already yeah, 3. Jab, 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 Right Hook was a bestseller as well and was out by that point. And yeah.
Yeah. So Roberto and I are saying this to say this. It takes a lot of time and a lot of work. You can't dabble in it. And so if you want to be the go-to expert in your niche, you just got to plan this out. And again, you can go to YouTube. Roberto's channel is specifically, it's youtube.com/RobertoBlake2. Roberto Blake 2.
As in the number 2.
As in the number 2, thank you. And you can find him and you know, you can check out what he does and get some tips and strategies there. You can sign up for his Create Awesome newsletter and get some more tips. But bottom line is, ladies and gentlemen, it just takes work. And you know what? here's what's so funny. I don't know if you've ever gotten this question. I've had, I don't know, probably a dozen people in over the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years who've asked me, well, how do you make a video go viral? And
they're asking the wrong question.
Aren't they, though? I mean, here it is. Here's the answer. And it took me a while to figure that out because my answer was, I don't know how to make a video go viral. And then I got a little bit smarter. I'd say, you know, I don't think anybody knows how to make a video go viral. And then finally, the answer is make a really good video. I mean,
it is and it isn't, because you can make a really good video and it may not ever go viral. I mean, viral is a matter of mostly a lot of random luck, chaos, and listening very well and being able to move lightning fast on the thing that has the most people's attention at the moment. Make a video
yes.
response to, God forbid, a national tragedy. The minute
yeah, like
happens,
Donald Trump.
You get a video up within 5 minutes, guess what? It'll probably be viral.
That's right. Yeah, but you know what? I like that. A national tragedy. You could probably make comments about something that Donald Trump said because he says something stupid pretty regularly. Or, you know, if you're a big Donald Trump fan, maybe you want to say something in support of him and pick on some of the other candidates. But I like that idea.
Say the most inflammatory thing you can possibly think of, but bear in mind that it's like, okay, great, you made a viral video. What's the value of that? What does that actually do for you?
Right. You know, we've seen a really good example is we've seen multiple videos. One of my favorite viral videos, there's this cop singing, you know, lip singing to Taylor Swift. And it's a great little video. I mean, I've never watched the entire thing because, I know the song and it's a chubby, wubby police officer and he's really jamming out to Taylor Swift. The value to me personally is minimal. I mean, it's cute. I think it's probably good for a lot of people to see a police officer, you know, do something fun and it's probably great PR. I think he's had over a couple of million views. But you can't replicate that. It's not like you can copy and paste that. That's number one. Number two, what was the value? Well, for him, you know, he probably got a little publicity, a little notoriety out of it. It probably helped the police officers. But I like the question that you're asking. What is the point? What is the value in that? And I cut you off, but you started to say something that along the lines that they're asking the wrong question. You shouldn't be asking how to make a video go viral. What should you be asking?
You should be asking what you can create that has the most value for other people and gives you an opportunity to get value in return.
I like that. Yeah, that's good.
And it sounds hokey. It sounds altruistic, but like when people naively say, you know, when people are asked, well, why do businesses exist? Everyone, 80% of the time, what comes out of their mouth is to make money. Like,
yes.
I'm sure Blockbuster was really interested in making money. Somehow they're not anymore, though. Why is that happening? Because they didn't deliver on the experience and the service and the value that people wanted, and they were naive about that.
Yeah. You know, and it's not so much about being altruistic. Look, in a day in time, this to me is a great way to stand out. Because look, if you go to my website or you go to anybody else's website, you're going to hear all the good things I have to say about myself. Bert's a great guy. You should give Bert a lot of money. You know, look at all the other great people that love Bert. You know, hire the amazing Bert. Well, that doesn't mean anything. Everybody talks about themselves good, right? And so maybe somebody wants to look at, well, how do I really get to know this guy without even calling him? Because I don't want to be sold, right? I don't want to talk to anybody that might sell me. So a YouTube video is a great way to do that. And they can say, oh, look, this guy, you know, I like this guy's personality. I like his sense of humor. You know, he doesn't take himself too serious. Whatever it is, they resonate with you.
Oh, wow.
Or maybe now they do business with you. What's that?
Right, or Bert explains things in a way that I just get. There's no fluff.
Yes, right. Now, and of course, this is a negative, but it's also a good negative, and that is they may say, you know what, I don't like this guy at all. I don't like his personality. I don't like the way he explains things. So I'm not going to even bother. And that's okay because it saves you time.
Exactly. Everyone's time is saved. It's beautiful. I tell people
yes.
that authenticity is the best funnel and filter for business in the world. You should have, you shouldn't have the desire to do business with all 7 billion people on the planet, because the reality is that you're not going to get along, unfortunately, with all 7 billion people on the planet. You should focus on the relationships that will mean the most to you and will mean the most to people who want what you have to offer. And so by worrying about the market share that you don't get, worrying about the no's, the people who obsess over that negativity or what they think they're missing out on are not doubling down on the best value they have to offer and the people who want the most from them.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. You know, it's what do you call it? It's amazing. There is this mindset of instant gratification. You hear these people who get discovered on YouTube. Justin Bieber, I think, was discovered on YouTube. There's been a lot of
yep.
people that have made a fortune on YouTube, but those are the exceptions. They're not the rule. Yeah, you know, you have to apply the 20-80 rule to YouTube. 80% of us on YouTube are going to have mediocre to mild to very little of any kind of real fame come out of it. Doesn't mean we can't make good money out of it. You know, I did an interview with a couple of young this is a couple of years ago. I was doing some work for Fox in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and they had me interview these girls. And at that time, they were doing like $250,000 in reported income. They were high school. I think one was 14, one was 16 or 16, 17, around that age group. And they were doing these thing called haul videos, H-A-U-L videos.
Yep.
And they would go out on a shopping spree and they haul the stuff back. And they would talk about, look at these, you know, I bought these earrings and I got them for $1 over here at this store. And look at these cute shoes. And it wasn't sometimes it wasn't very well lit. But let me tell you, they had like 400,000 or 500,000 subscribers. They were making all this money. I don't know if they still are. That was a couple of years ago. They might be doing better. They may be doing worse. But bottom line is, they were being very authentic. Their content would probably not resonate with a lot of people. Certainly wouldn't resonate with with boys or men. But, you know, teenage girls love them.
Every mother and every daughter and every girl and every teenager can relate to that in the same way that they can relate
yeah.
to, like, a select 10 minutes out of a Full House episode, and an advertiser knows that. And so
Absolutely.
There's a value there, and there's an opportunity. Like, I love what you said about that because, you know, so many people get sucked into the vanity of YouTube, and they're looking to be internet famous or YouTube famous, and then they're missing the opportunity to be financially comfortable or very successful in a niche. And there's so many of these kids, and it bothers me so much that they're focused on – they're trying to become the next PewDiePie. They're trying to, you know, become the next YouTube gamer, or they're trying to become the next YouTube beauty guru because they see that somebody else did it and that they were successful, or they became rich doing that, or they became famous doing that, instead of doing the thing that they're best at, creating something awesome, sharing it with the world – and then just getting those people that are the same kind of crazy, stupid, excited about the thing that they love on board with them and becoming their quote-unquote internet friend, and then extrapolating and growing the community and the value from that, and then figuring out, well, what's practical about this is that these people trust me, these people like me, we have a relationship, and the value of that relationship might translate to something more meaningful. And that's where the real opportunity, the real sweet spot is. If you have 1,000 people in your tribe, as we like to say in internet marketing world, if you have 1,000 people in your tribe, 1,000 people subscribe to you, 1,000 people on your newsletter, but every single one of those people, let's say every month they dug deep, and instead of buying coffee or going to the vending machine, they did something for you that turned out to translate to $5. $5. All of a sudden, you're making $5,000 a month. That's not insubstantial. That's getting very close on the way, and that's with the 1,000 that you have. What if you got another 2,000? What if you got another 3,000? All of a sudden, $5 a month is not a lot of money. It's really not. And all of a sudden, that's a six-figure business. If you can figure out how to extrapolate $5 worth of value from the relationships you have with a small enough group of people that you can cultivate with hard work, you don't even have to get 10,000, but if you could figure that out, if you could figure out what could I give somebody, What experience or what knowledge or what entertainment or what product even can I give someone that is worth $5 of retaining this relationship? You could grow a six-figure business or even a five-figure business that's still very healthy and gives you a really comfortable lifestyle, and you're doing the thing that you love. And why are people not more excited about doing that? Why do they want the vanity of a 500,000 subscribers when there are articles about people who've come out of, you know, hiding and said that they have 500,000 subscribers, but they can't pay their rent and they're crying themselves to sleep in their car? Why do they want the vanity? There are YouTubers, young YouTubers in their early 20s that can't work shifts at restaurants to make the money that they need on the side because YouTube isn't cutting it for them, that they can't even work those jobs efficiently, and they have to take night shifts and be exhausted because their fan base will mob the coffee shop or the restaurant, and all the teeny boppers and the tweens will want autographs, and it's disrupting a real business that pays them the money that they need to live off of. YouTube fame has actually hurt a lot of people rather than help them, and it's partly because they were younger. They didn't get into the business side. They were very altruistic about, no, YouTube's not about money or these things, and they didn't want to look at it that way. And now they're belatedly realizing that, well, now this is, you know, hurting me. I'm not very attractive to a business owner, and I don't have a way to make money off of this now. And then whenever I do anything, because I cultivated this fan base and they weren't used to me asking for anything, or they think, well, you have all these numbers, you should be rich, you should be successful, and that's not how it works. When they decide belatedly to start asking for something, they start losing fans, they become insecure about it, or people want to call them a sellout, and it becomes a real problem for them.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned $5. I don't know, are you familiar with Glenn Beck?
I am a little familiar with Glenn Beck, yeah.
Okay, so Glenn Beck, most of you guys knows, most of you guys, probably some of you guys probably know that he was on Fox News for many years, ended up getting fired from there. But he was smart enough that while he had this platform, he started building a YouTube channel and a subscriber base. And so he had two offerings. You could sign up. He had one membership that was $1 a month and another membership that was $3 a month to get special content that you couldn't get anyplace else. So you were talking about $5. Now, of course, he had bigger numbers because he's on national TV, but a buck, mm-hmm. $3. It doesn't have to be $5. I mean, you know, but I like that concept that you're talking about. You know, $3, $5, $10, whatever you're going to, you know, but, you know, when you start, when your value is good enough that people are willing to pay you to keep that relationship, you know that you are doing something right.
Exactly.
And
it goes back
that,
to what we've been harping on this whole time, value.
Value. Value and consistent content. So, all right, so first of all, does it make sense for you? I like this idea of creating a content calendar and then figuring out what it's going to take to put out these videos, doing it consistently. And what else? What else? Because we got a few more minutes. What else do we need to do to start preparing for our 10,000 subscribers?
So initially, most people complain about, like, you know, how hard it is to get attention, to get noticed in YouTube. You know, I would argue that, like, every teenage boy and girl remembers, like, how hard it was to get attention in high school to attract the person that you're interested in, how hard it is to get somebody to, you know, ask you to dance or to say yes to it and everything like that. So guess what? Yeah, it's hard. Working out at the gym is hard. You know, bringing a kid into the world's hard, you know. So daunted by that, understand that, yeah, it's going to take some effort and some work. So hit the pavement in the same way that, like, if we want to get business clients, what do? Like, everyone's so quick to just jump to the internet for the answer, which you can definitely still do, and it's scalable, absolutely. But, like, why don't you start with your core relationships? Why don't you start with those 500 Facebook friends who might not really be, like, creating value for you? Ask them for support. Ask them to share this thing if they like it on their page, but only if they like it. Ask them to say, hey, what do you think about this? Or because you have to think about the way we watch videos. One, we search for videos. They're either we're trying to entertain ourselves, solve a problem, get motivated, whatever. So you got to play the search game. But if you're not good at that, or if you can't rank right away, the next thing you go to is, well, we watch and consume things that our friends watch and consume. I don't care about a million random strangers who thought this was cool on the internet. But you know what? you know, if the girlfriend shares it or your best friend shares it, they're going to nag you for the next 3 days about, did you watch that thing I sent you? Did you watch that thing I sent you? So play that game. Get people you know to share it with people they know, and that's how you'll begin to build the first traction of your audience. Use the feedback from that to understand what you're doing right or wrong. Don't look at the numbers to tell you what you're doing right or wrong. Look at real human beings. Give me real, honest feedback about what they enjoyed or what they didn't, and then pivot where necessary or double down or ramp up, whatever you need to do. So, you know, that's the big key is, well, how do I get noticed? I need to make a dedicated video about that specifically. Like, how, if I have zero, how do I get noticed? How do I get attention? Focus on trying to figure out how people search, but then also think about what people will share and what they'll be interested in. If you want to get somebody in on the ground floor, what I recommend to people, if we're going to talk about business, because I really like to focus there because it's the most, you know, it's the most practical thing. I keep saying that because, sure, you know, we all need money. We all need to grow our business. We need to build our personal brand. And even if you're an entertainer, you still need to do that. Like, consider shooting in bulk like we talked about, but release a series from the very beginning if you want to drive subscriber numbers, because if you have 5 or 10 things out at the very beginning, it's a lot easier for people to understand why they should stick around or that they can bulk watch. Use the house of cards strategy there. But make sure the content makes sense for that. So you can either create a video that's like 5 steps to do this, and you could do 2 little series like that and make them 3 to 5 minute videos so that it's easy on you and so you don't feel overwhelmed, and you can also not waste people's time, and you can just give them upfront value. Okay, so you could do 2 little 5-step or 6-step series to start to establish that, yeah, this person's credible or this person's walking me through a process. Okay, I need to bookmark this. I need to watch the rest of them. I don't have time now, so I'll subscribe and I'll come back. Okay. Oh, wow, that was really helpful or valuable. Let me share that with my colleague or my friend or my classmate or my family member so that they can do this thing too. And then all of a sudden, you now have this pipeline. You create an opportunity. And every single video is also an opportunity to get subscribers. I have over like 600-plus videos in my YouTube channel. People talk about my abnormal subscriber growth. But what they don't think about is, if you think about it as products and inventory, how do I not have that subscriber growth considering all the opportunities, all the chances, all the at-bats that I have to introduce someone to me and what's valuable, and then take them to a playlist of 20 or 30 more tips around that thing that they care about? So inventory matters, and that's why we talk about the consistency of putting out content, not just for the sake of, oh, same bat time, same bat channel. It may not make sense for somebody to do a video every week. What might make sense is for them to put out 20 or 30 videos for the year, and that's it, but spend the whole year marketing those videos to the right audience that solves that problem and converts for them. So
I love that.
That's, you know, that's what I would say.
Well, listen, we're out of time. Roberto Blake, it's been a blast having you on the show. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about the do's and don'ts of marketing with YouTube videos. And again, guys, if you want to find out more about Roberto Blake, you can simply go to youtube.com/Roberto Blake, the number 2, and you can see him there. You can get all sorts of tips. Like he said, he's got over 600 videos, and he is there to help you create awesomeness or create something awesome today. And Roberto Blake, I want to again say thank you for stopping by and sharing, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Bert. And yeah, I'd love to come on again, and we can talk about whatever you want. We can talk about social media, video marketing. We can even talk about this whole live streaming thing that everyone's getting into.
We'll do it. Thank you so much. Good stuff there from Roberto Blake. Over 80,000 subscribers, over 600 videos, and, you know, there was just so much meat in what he was sharing with us, right? So I hope you'll check out his YouTube channel, youtube.com/Roberto Blake number 2, and start putting the power of, you know, videos into your mix. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.